Titus chapter 2, again, Titus chapter 2, where the scriptures say, "But speak thou the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith, sound in charity, sound in patience." It doesn't say it exactly that, but that's what we're going to learn, that that's what it means next week when Dr. Mitchell finishes up that verse. I assigned him a verse for 2 weeks. I keep laughing about that. He did a super job though, didn't he? So anyway, back to our text. So that's the aged men. The aged women, likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. So 2 weeks ago when we started this, I spoke on what should aged women be. And today, and that is in verse 3, and today we're going to look at the topic of what should aged women do. And then next week, Dr. Mitchell will finish verse 2. And then in 2 weeks, we'll talk about what should aged women teach. So I gave myself the easy thing. I got like a huge list there. Just read it and it takes the whole hour. But anyway, so that's where we're going. I got a little bit of feedback the other night, and I think we were in singing practice, and somebody there was like, "Man, Dr. Mitchell made us feel old." And it reminded me of something. Earlier this week or the week before, I'd been listening to a podcast of Dave Ramsey. You guys know who he is, right? So, and I would say, Dave Ramsey, he knows what he's saying when he talks about money. But I'm really surprised at how crude he is. He loves to just say crude words. And how often he uses what I think is the Lord's name in vain. I think it's almost like he's gotten to a certain age where he doesn't care. And we don't want to be that type of aged person. And when you make as much money as he does, nobody, you know, he's not going to listen to what anybody says. So I'm not saying don't listen to him, because he's got good, it's a good reminder for us to be scriptural with our use of money. But I'm kind of surprised. So, and I'm just saying that because as he's getting older, it's apparent that he's getting younger talent next to him. And somebody, some caller said something, and this guy who's in his 40s was talking about, "Yeah, when we get older." And Ramsey was like, "We? What do you call the definition of old? If you're old, what am I?" You know, so, and that's just like, Dr. Swangum made me feel that way. He's like, if Dr. Mitchell is saying we're old, what does that make me? Mr. Goss, the same way, says, I was just sitting there and says, "So are you're putting yourself in the old group at 50? So anyway, we're not all old. But we pretty much have empty nests, except for Dr. Mitchell. He's helping out. His nest is not empty. I heard that Bob Hope said, "You know you're old when the candles cost more than the cake." And it's apparently, it's reported that Agatha Christie wrote that she had married an archaeologist. And somebody said, "Well, why would you marry an archaeologist?" And she said, "Because the older I get, the more he'll appreciate me." They say there's only three stages in life: youth, adulthood, and my, you're looking well. And when they start saying that to you, you know where you are. But we're glad that we know what we know as we get older, right? Yeah. But we just wish we had the youth to express it anymore. It's a shame that youth was wasted on people so young. But just because you're old, or we're old, or however we want to say it, life doesn't have to be bleak. For a Christian, it is to be ages to be rewarded as a crowning time of life with a level of spiritual maturity that you can't have in your youth. No matter how, you know, raised in a Christian home, raised in a preacher's home, when you're 20 years old, you're still dumb as a 20-year-old, okay? You guys, and now I can see we, there's something that comes with maturity, with age. Now, some people think just because they're old, they're wise. And that's not necessarily true. But wisdom does come with age. There's a certain level of spiritual maturity, spiritual experience that you just can't have when you're young. For those who know Christ, all those who have walked with God, walked with Christ for any length of time, should look forward. We should look forward to old age because, one, and this is kind of snarky, but it takes us nearer to heaven. Actually, everybody is one day closer to heaven than they were yesterday. Everybody is, because we don't know when life will end, as we were reminded of in the memorial service yesterday. But the older we get, the more likely it is that we're even closer than some other people. And heaven's a wonderful place. At least that's what the song says. None of us have been there. If you have, write a book and make some money out of it. But age takes us nearer to heaven. But it puts us in a situation where we have accumulated spiritual experience. And that makes us rich. We have experiences. We've been through troubles. And whether we were at the time successful through that trouble or we learned through that trouble, that's in our past. That's in our experience. And we know something from that. And we're rich with those spiritual experiences the older that we get. It enables us to be leaders and mentors and models and examples for the young. And this passage kind of assumes that that's what we'll be doing, especially for the ladies, as we'll see. It also allows us to filter out life. To young people, everything that happens in their life is important. But the older we get, the more we have something happen to us, and we can just say, you know, it might be a huge thing to a 20-year-old, but we know it's not really that big of a deal because we've been through things and we can filter out things and remember and savor and act upon the things that really are valuable. That's tremendous for us to have. And God expects us, as I think, as we'll see in this passage, God expects us to value that, but also to use it in His church, which for us is our church. The Bible tells everyone to revere those who are older than we are. Leviticus 19:32. Thou shalt rise up before the hoary head and honor the face of the old men and fear thy God. I am the Lord. Job says in Job 12:12, with the ancient is wisdom, and in length of days, understanding. Okay, the longer we live, the more we understand. Proverbs 16:31 adds a very important thing. Proverbs 16:31 says, the hoary head is a crown of glory. Does anybody know the rest of the verse? If it be found in the way of righteousness. So, someone who's walked a long time in the path of righteousness is a great treasure to our church. If we have a church, now, Mrs. Dameron did a little thing, I don't know, and she was like, I was looking at, and she just split the church into four age categories, and almost in every category there was the same amount of people, which is a tremendous blessing for our church. If our church only had young people in it, all those young people would continually make mistakes that we all know and can help them not make. If this was all of our church, we wouldn't have the vibrancy and the excitement and the energy, the endless energy that youth has. So, but just because that is favored, and just because the world values youth more highly than wisdom, doesn't mean they're right. Okay? The world doesn't want anybody to be mature. The world doesn't value maturity. But God does. God's, remember that verse we learned way back? The green page? But grow in grace. So God expects us to be growing. And the longer we've been Christians, the more we should have been growing. And so God values, and Christians should put a high premium on maturity and age. So someone who's walked a long time in the path of righteousness is a great treasure to our church. Psalm 71, and I'm just kind of setting the stage here. We'll get back to Titus kind of today. But Psalm 71, 17 and 18 says, O God, thou hast taught me from my youth, and hitherto, so this person is an older person, as we'll see, hitherto I have declared thy wondrous works. So from thy youth, from my youth, you've taught me, and all this time I have declared thy wondrous works. Now also, when I am old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not. Listen to what he says, though. Forsake me not until I have showed thy strength unto this generation and thy power to everyone that is to come. So God does not look at old people and say, you're done. We're just going to set you over here and let you finish out your existence. He has, and I'm, please don't be offended because God honors old people, but I'm going to use the phrase, God has a tremendous job for old and gray-headed people to do, or bald-headed, wherever we are, and that is to show forth his strength to this generation. The young folks, they haven't been through as much. They haven't seen as much. I mean, the Bible is full of how important history is. Sorry, we are living history. Some of you have more living history than I am, but we're all living history. We can say to this younger generation, I've seen it. We can say, I was young and now I'm old, and yet have I seen the righteous begging bread, or I'm not quoting the verse right. So God has a tremendous job for us, very important job, a job that no one else in the world can do. Young people can't do the job that we can do because they're young. They're young and stupid. So anyway, right? Aren't they? We can say that. It's just us in here. Anyway, but right? The psalmist says, don't forsake me. Don't leave me off. Don't put me on the shelf until I have showed thy strength unto this generation and thy power to everyone that is to come. Psalm 92. Similar idea. Psalm 92 verses 12 through 15. The righteous shall flourish like the palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. I think he's using trees on purpose. Trees take a while to become big and strong and to flourish. A 20-year-old tree is still only 30 feet tall, not 100 feet tall. Those that be planted in the house of the Lord that shall flourish in the courts of our God, they shall still bring forth fruit in old age. There's a different definition of this word than what comes to mind, this next word. They shall be fat and flourishing. Why? To show that the Lord is upright. Young people, even in our church, they wonder whether the Lord is upright. They not wonder whether the Lord is upright, but they wonder whether serving the Lord is worth it. They wonder whether going this way or that way instead of this way is better or not. And we can tell them. Now, whether they'll listen to us or not is another thing, but it's our job. We've come to us just because we're older and we've walked with the Lord. It's our job to help young people make decisions and to point out what happens when you go the right way, what happens when you go the wrong way, whether we know both of those by experience or by observation. So those who can best declare the character of God are those who've walked with him the longest. And if our church has an abundance of that type of people, what a source of blessing. People who have spiritual experience. People who have spiritual strength. People who have spiritual endurance and wisdom for all of us. But only if they walk in the way of righteousness. There's no value to being old if you're not godly. And we know that because we have acquaintances that we know that are our age and they're not godly. And I mean, I'm not saying they should go take their life, but you understand. I mean, they're like, okay, what a waste. They get to a point in their life. Now that they've accomplished their purpose in their job, they really have no purpose in life. And what purpose do we have? We have a whole church full of people that we can influence for godliness and righteousness. But there's no value in being old if you're not godly. There's no value in being old if you're not a model or an example. You can be the oldest, most godly, you know, most righteous hermit in the world, and you're not helping anybody. And you can be a hermit in our church. Show up, leave, and that's it. Do your little thing. I'm not saying everybody has to get up here, but we're here to be an example and an encouragement and all the other things that God gives us, responsibilities God gives us by being here and having served him this long in our lives. So, just to bring us into the topic again, we covered those things. In verse 3 of Titus, back in Titus chapter 2, verse 3, we talked about what an aged woman should be. It says, and the aged women likewise. So that likewise refers back to verse 2, those holy traits that the aged men should have, being sober, grave, temperate. Oh my, there was three S's there. And I don't remember them. Sorry, Dr. Mitchell. Serious?
Sober, sensible.
Sensible, yes. And then we're going to get three more. But those things we should have. But then it says, likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness. So he said that our behavior, ladies, your behavior should be as, you know, that becometh or becomes or is what people think of when they think of holiness. Like a priest. You think of a priest, you think, but you're ladies. So like a priestess, it's kind of a hard way to think because to me, when I think of priestess, I think of a false god or something like that. But the point is that wherever you are, you're holy. You act holy. You live holy. This is one of those places in the Bible that covers areas of our life that the Bible doesn't address. We talked about that. The Bible says whatever we do should be done to the glory of God. The way we think, we should think about these things and these things and these things. And here's another one of those. Your behavior should be one that becomes holiness. So the point being, and this is one of the points that goes along with this, is an idea that we've heard for a long, long, long time, and that is that nothing, for a believer, nothing is secular. The world divides things. I have spiritual, you know, but for a believer, we're not a Sunday go-to-meeting Christian. Every day, everything we do is for God's glory. Whether it's digging a ditch or designing a building or engineering a bridge or whatever, or teaching in a school or preaching the gospel, all of that can be done for God's glory. And when Christians understood that, it changed the world. Because before people understood that, in modern history, they just lived their lives for no purpose. But when your purpose is not necessarily to make a shoe, is to glorify God, you make a better shoe. And everything else that goes along with it. Because you're not working for another man, you're working for God. So lives that become behavior as becomes holiness. The next one was not false accusers. That's the word diabolos, remember? That's a slanderer, not using our tongues in the wrong way. The third one, be not given to much wine. And for sure, it's speaking of wine, but wine has this trait that other things have in our, can have, and that is that they grab us, they enslave us, and we have to do that. We have to do them. Actually, we do have to do them. So don't be enslaved by something. And then to be teachers of good things. And we said that teachers of good things would be by example and word. So the verse 3 says, the aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. And the next phrase is what we're going to take for today. So that's verse 3 is what you should be. The next phrase is what you should do. We should be all those things so that, or that they may teach the young women. God wants you to live a certain way, to be a certain type of person, so that you can teach the young women. Now, any pastor who has written on this and addresses this idea, some just gloss over it, but any that notice this, what I'm going to bring to you, they notice that Paul told Titus to teach older men, he told Titus to teach older women, and he told Titus to teach younger men. And they all say he purposely told them not to teach the younger women. And they say, it's not that the younger women can't learn from a pastor or something like that, but in particular, so the first the people that are first responsible for teaching younger women are not pastors. They're the older women in the church. Okay? That's what the passage says. The ones that are, I'm not parents, of course, they're first responsible. But after parents, the younger women in the church should be taught first by the older women in the church. Now, I teach Sunday school, I teach college, me and my wife work with the singles, I exhort in different ways, but in God's order, the best people to teach the young women are the older women. And it's not just a good idea because it works best, it's a good idea because it's God's idea, and it's not just an idea, it's what God has said. And I want to impress upon you that this is a responsibility that you ladies have. Now, some of you will jump all over that. You're going to like go marching up to every single one of them and tell them all a piece of your mind. Okay, well, you won't do that if you are what verse 3 says. Okay, we're to be something before we go out and do something. Okay, but at the same time, you're an older lady, you see somebody doing something, you think, wow, they're heading the wrong way. Don't keep your mouth shut. Pray, maybe talk to somebody about the best way to approach them, okay? Because there's human nature involved. They are a human, and you're a human, and humans make mistakes, okay? But it is your responsibility to teach the younger women. So, here's some things first that the Bible doesn't say you should do. Number one, talk. Okay? Go around and talk about them, right? Did you see her? What is she thinking? How many of us have thought it? Yes. How many of us have said it? We do. Like I said last week, We've been around long enough, we know what's going through their head. We've been in their shoes before. We know what's going through their head. But we're not to be slanderers, right? We're not to be, it's not, what's the word in this passage? False accusers. So don't just go around talking about them. Leviticus 19:16, thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people. Proverbs 11:13, a talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. Proverbs 18:8, the words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down to the innermost parts of the belly. Proverbs 26:20, where no wood is, there the fire goes out. So where there is no talebearer, the strife ceaseth. God puts on you the responsibility of helping younger women to grow and to know what to do. If you're talebearing, if you're gossiping about them, they're not going to listen to a thing you say about them. In fact, they're going to be hurt terribly. What does James say about a tongue? A tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So it's not like I sit up here and know that anybody is doing this. But the Bible knows that it's in our nature, and so we're taught not to do it. So teaching doesn't involve just talking about them. That's not what the Bible says to do. Another thing that it doesn't say is to tattle on them. Tattling. And to me, tattling is trying to get somebody else to do your job. God has given you ladies the responsibility to teach the younger. Don't try to get somebody else to do it. I don't know that this is exactly the right use of the word. I did kind of look into it, and it could and might not be. 1 Timothy 5:13 is talking about widows, that they be widows indeed, and not to let younger ones come in, because they might, withal, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. Now, here's what I mean. Here's what I see as an example of ladies being tattlers. It happens because we have this wonderful blessing that God has given us here called a Christian school and a Christian college. And because we have a Christian school and a Christian college, we have rules. The school system has pros and cons. That school system with that rules helps young people grow up in a structured environment. It protects them from experiencing things that are bad while they don't have the maturity to turn it down. And then hopefully as they get older, they grow up, they have the maturity, and they're tempted then by that, and they have the maturity to resist it. So we have these rules. Okay? But a girl who's breaking the rules, will she learn better from you directly, or from you going to the school and saying, I saw this girl doing this. I think it's against the rules. And so then the person there has to take it to the school administrator, and they got to investigate it, because should they just take your word for it? And so then they get a demerit for something that happened 10 days ago by the time it happened. And they're like, well, I don't even remember what I did. I was wearing a skirt that somebody thought was not right. And it was in church. So obviously it wasn't, I mean, it probably wasn't right. But it obviously wasn't something that everybody was gawking at because it was so bad. And you know what? Most people, if you're the type of person that just likes to get in people's faces, you probably don't go to the school system and have the school system do your work for you. But you probably shouldn't be jumping in people's faces either. But most of us don't like to just go up to somebody. It's harder to talk to somebody individually. It's much easier to talk to somebody else and let a system take care of somebody. But a system doesn't take care of people. A system is impersonal. Getting a demerit doesn't teach me anything. Having a talk with a godly lady, that teaches me something. It's scary though, because you want that young person to like you. And if you go to them and talk to them, they might not like you. But we are told to teach, not to tattle. Say, well, how could I do that? They're just 19 years old. Okay? Well, that makes it a little awkward. They're still in somebody else's house. Right? And you saw something. You think that other godly parent would like your help? Would you have liked somebody's help with your children? Absolutely. So don't jump on the child, especially if they're still in somebody else's house. You're a lady, you go to their mom, say, hey, I noticed this. What do you think if I went and talked to your daughter about that? You'd get some backstory. You'd get, yeah, that would be good. I've been talking to her about that type of thing for a while. Or, wow, I didn't notice that myself, but you're right. Or, who knows? You'd have a nice Christian conversation with somebody that it actually should be in the conversation, the girl's mom, you know, and then you could be a help in a Christian way to that person. So we have this great structure, and it has helped our church tremendously. We have grown up a lot of strong Christians with the help of our schools. But the schools are not what help the thing. It has to be us. And then it doesn't say just to tell them. So sometimes we will just say, you know what you ought to do? You ought to do this. You know, or maybe it's not that edgy, but we just tell them. You know, if I were you, I would do this, 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 and this, and you leave them. And then you see them not doing what you told them to do, and you're like, why aren't they doing what I'm telling them? I'm trying to help this person. They never listen to what I say. Okay, so we can't just tell them. Don't tell them off. Don't just tell them. Think of this. This Proverbs 18:13 says, he that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is folly and a shame to him. So if I'm a Christian lady and I see a young lady that I think needs help and I just jump right into her situation and say, you know what? You really ought to do this. I've been watching this. What's going on? You're answering her problem before you even know what it is. Right? You're answering a matter before you hear it. He that is first in his own cause seemeth just. Of course you think you're right. You're the only one that has heard your part of the story. But his neighbor comes and searcheth them out. So you can't help somebody by just telling them what you know and what you know they should do. You should teach. The Bible tells us that the older women, the aged women, should be all these things that they may teach the young women, to be sober, to love their husbands. So we should teach, not just tell, not tattle, not talk about them, teach. And not should teach, we must teach. Yours is first priority after parents to help young ladies in our church. And don't get me wrong. Mrs. Dameron is an older lady. Don't tell her I said that. Okay. Older lady. She can help young ladies. My wife can help. I mean, the pastor's wives can help. But that doesn't mean that doesn't say. It's not talking to pastor's wives. It's not talking to deacons' wives. It's saying the older women in the church should be this way so that they can teach. Now, we should do it in a godly fashion, but it is ladies' first responsibility after parents to help young ladies know how to become and how to work out their salvation, their being a Christian. So we must teach. That involves time. It doesn't take much time to just like mull over something and rehearse it in your mind and go to somebody and tell them something. It doesn't take much time. Well, it can end up taking time if you start gossiping and that grows into something. But it really takes time to help somebody learn something, to teach them. It takes heart. Okay? You can get irritated at what some people are doing, at what some young lady says that it just irritates you, and so you go and say something, That's selfish. You want them to stop doing that so you stop getting irritated. That's not having a heart for that person. To teach takes heart. You know this. If you teach, I'm seeing, and I'm not trying to call her down, Mrs. Swangum there is right with me. She knows that she has to have a heart for her four-year-olds in her class or fourth graders, Mrs. Haiti, right? You have to have a heart for them. If you don't have a heart for those kids, you're not going to be able to connect with them. Same with the 18-year-olds. Same with the 23-year-old ladies. Sometimes it's harder to do because they've, you know, they're a little more independent, and they should be. They're growing up. God expects them to mature, but they still need our help, as the scriptures say. So it takes heart. It takes emotion. It can wear on you. You put your heart into somebody, and then they make a bad decision. That hurts. It doesn't mean life is over for them or for you, but it hurts. But you know what else it takes or gives? Involves joy. There's tremendous joy. Remember what the Apostle John said? I have no greater joy, right, than to hear that my children walk in truth. And he wasn't writing that to his physical children. So all of us can have this joy, but particular to our lesson, you ladies, you can have tremendous joy seeing a young lady in our church grow up and get married and be a great help and build a great home and rear children for the Lord as all the things that you're supposed to help teach them in the next verse. And that can give you tremendous joy. Joy upon joy. You have joy from your own kids and you get joy from your church kids, from the church. Just, there's joy in it. So what does it take? You must teach. Let's just talk about a couple of things for teaching. To be a teacher, you must always be learning yourself. You must always be learning yourself. And this goes for all of us in here. We can never get to the spot where we say, I'm good. I know enough. I'll read my Bible each day, but I don't really need to be studying or trying to learn something new. Right, Mr. Hunt? I see he's grinning at me. Pastor Darren is putting you through it, isn't he? Like, take this class, take that. You don't all have to take a seminary class. But we should not stop. Once we stop learning, we stop being able to teach. We just get stagnant. I'll just give a personal example. I stopped taking classes in education now in 2004. You know, I'm a doctor, right? Take two aspirin and call me in the morning. But I'm a doctor. I did that. I took classes 1999, 2000, all the way through 2004. And then I worked on my dissertation. And through that time, I could have spoken at every single PTF we had because I was learning. I wouldn't teach. I couldn't speak at PTF, the things I was learning in school business management class. But just I was learning. And so as I was learning about education a lot, I was a fountain. I would see things, and I would always be able to teach new things on education. 16 years goes by, and I don't get assigned to teach, preach a PTF but once every 2 years, and boy, am I glad. Because it's almost like it's dry. Now, I continue to read some about education, but not nearly what I was doing back then. When we stop learning, we stop teaching. Now, you can take that about engineering or education, but we're talking about what it means to be a Christian woman. You continue, you say, well, I've heard it all before. Keep learning. There's room. There's room to go. Keep growing. Keep learning, and you can keep teaching. When you stop learning, you stop teaching, whether it's spiritual, physical, intellectual, social. I hate it when people ask this question, but it's a challenge. What have you learned in the last year? All right, we'll just stop it there. That's so uncomfortable when people, when I, like, That is not fair. I can't remember what I ate for supper. I don't know what I learned in the last year. But we should be learning. We should be learning. Another thing is, in order to teach, you have to build bridges to those that you teach. You have to make connections with them. If you're mentoring somebody, if you want to be an influence on somebody's life, you have to have a connection with them. You have to build a bridge to them. You can't just tell them something. People say that 7% of what people learn come from words only. So if I'm just a speaker and that's it, people are only getting 7% of what I say. They're missing all the rest of it. Or however that statistic would work. It's just a low number. There needs to be more than just words. That goes back to, you can't just tell them something. You have to have a connection with them. You want to work with them. They have to want to hear from you. Connecting takes, you can't just connect with their head. You can't say, look, doesn't this make sense? Just read the Bible. It has the answers. There has to be a heart connection. Learning begins at the feeling level. Now, we all know that you shouldn't live off of your feelings. But if we're honest with ourselves, learning begins at the feeling level. If you are looking toward tonight, and I don't kid myself, some of you are like, oh, it's Dr. Voglin. I just have a hard time listening to him. I'm sure people do. And so your feeling is like, okay, I'm sure I'll have something good to say. It's harder to get it. Okay? Can't wait till next week when Dr. Mitchell speaks. I'm teasing. But you get the point. Put the name in there of somebody that's just, it's just hard for you to listen to. That's your feelings. If you don't feel a connection to the person that's talking to you, it's going to be really hard to listen to them. It does consist of words, but it starts with feeling. If I offend somebody today, and next Thursday I say, hey, come here, I want to tell you something. Are they going to listen to me? I mean, they might listen to me, look at me with a pleasant look on their face, and walk away and say, who does he think he is? Okay, and let's just take the pastor part out of it. I'm just a person. If I'm rude to somebody, if I'm like belligerent or some way, they're not going to listen to me because they don't like or respect me. If you don't like or respect me, you won't hear what I have to say. You might, out of kindness to everyone else in the room, sit up there and look, but put that pleasant look on your face, but you're not listening. And we've all done it. We've all done it. And it happens even more on a personal level. You want to be a help to somebody, but that person, I'm not saying we just have to be nice and, you know, give chocolate to everybody we see that we want to teach, but there has to be some type of connection there. Earn the right to be heard. So the Bible tells you ladies, you are responsible to teach the younger ladies in the church. They're not going to listen to you just because the Bible told you to talk to them. You have to earn the right to speak to them. Be willing to be vulnerable to them. One of the reasons that God wants you to teach them is because you've been through what they're going through. You've seen other people go through what they're going through. But if you don't, I'm not saying you have to, you know, father confessor or sister confessor with them, but if you are like the type of person that teaches that has never done anything wrong, they're not going to listen to you. It's hard to get something from somebody who has never done anything wrong. I mean, and you can see their physical body. I mean, the Bible doesn't have any errors in it, but so be willing, when appropriate, to be vulnerable to them. And then it takes encouragement. And by this, I mean, you got to help them see the need for what you are teaching them. You, because God has given you the wisdom of experience and years and all of that, you might see a girl going through a situation and you want to help them. You build a connection with them. And then you begin to address the subject and they're like, why are you even talking about this? They have to see a need for what you're telling them. Now, many times it's very obvious. But sometimes it's like you see it because you've been around. They don't see it. But they need to see it. If they will see it now, their life will be changed. So that in a sense is that encouragement, helping them to see the need for what you are teaching them. So as to teach, we had all that introductory stuff, but to teach, it involves time, heart, emotion, joy, and in order to teach, you have to be learning yourself. You have to build bridges to the people that you're trying to teach. You have to connect with them heart to heart, not just, you know, cerebral, not just head to head. Learning begins, earn the right to be heard. It begins at a feeling level, be somebody that's respectable, and then show them the need, encourage them by showing them how what you have to tell them and listening to what you have to tell them will change your life for the better as a Christian. So, aged women must teach the younger women. The Bible tells us what we should be, tells us what we should do, and the next time we'll try to fit all those things in there. We'll skim over some of them, maybe highlight more of them, of what you should teach. But generally, we should be teaching. We must be teaching the younger women. And like I say, next time we'll look at what to teach in 2 weeks.